Hello, this is Darragh O'Brien with the RTE World Cup Rugby Podcast on the third Sunday of the tournament. And what a Sunday. We've just found out who Ireland's quarterfinal opponents are going to be. Yeah, I'm going to be chatting with Johnny Holland because we're down in Cork, coming to you from the Cork studios, and Johnny has popped in, and it's a lovely day out there, Johnny, and people are kind of happy enough too with the rugby, even though everyone was shouting for the Scots. If you haven't heard, which you have by now, it's 28-21. One of the best games, a lovely little minor classic to kind of wrap up the pool stages. Justin Tracy is on the line from Japan. Fiona Coughlin joins us as well. She's in Dublin. And we'll just kick it around a bit. First and foremost, your whistle report on that match, Johnny. What won it for Japan? How good were they? And how good a game was it?
Oh, it's just the pace they bring to it, isn't it? I think I sent out a tweet a while ago just saying, how did they do it? Because it was a Fukuoka's second try in the second half there. He just stripped one of the Scottish lads of the ball and just ran under the sticks as if there's nothing happening here, lads. I'm going to take this. It's my ball and I'm going to play, you know. So it's a very hard one to put your finger on. I think when you're watching Japan play, they don't look like they're star-studded and they don't look like they're going to do that much damage. But I think we all made the mistake in saying that as well before the Irish came, and now they've beaten Ireland and Scotland, you know. So I think it's just the numbers they have spread out across the pitch. They're very good in the attack and breakdown, so it means they don't waste any numbers there either. But I think the first play of the game will tell you what they bring. A bit of a low kick grubber along the ground from the kickoff, and Scotland kind of half knocked it on under a lot of pressure. That's kind of what they do. They think outside the box and they catch people by surprise, I think. So class game though. I mean, it was high octane stuff. It was 100 miles an hour. And to be fair to Scotland, they mixed it as well, and they came back in the second half and kind of upped the pace as well. But I think Japan had made a couple of subs at the same time, and it was just that time kind of allowed Scotland to get a bit of a hole in the game. But Japan looked in control for a lot of it, you know.
They did, and that was what was impressive, Fiona, as well, was their kind of the way of managing the game. They scored just before halftime, and then that try, that wonderful strip from the ruck, and 28-7 all of a sudden. And they really know when to stick the dagger in.
Development in their game, I think, from when Ireland played them in 2017 and even from the Pacific Nations Cup, they've just come on a huge amount. And I suppose what you consider a short amount of time, and the way they went about things is very clever. They had everyone centralised in Japan, and coaches had so much time with their players. Like, their basic skills are unbelievable. Their catch pass under pressure, they vary the game up so much, and they're just so exciting to watch. But as you said, it's not helter-skelter, although it might look like it at times. It's really controlled. It's putting kicks in behind, or it's just maintaining possession when they need to. Really clever performance from them, and, you know, deserving pool toppers of the pool. And I think every neutral was just shouting for Japan to win it. It was an unbelievable game.
And we're going to ask Justin about the atmosphere over there in a minute, but good point. The edge in physicality was definitely with the Japanese, and you could see it annoyed the Scots.
Oh, it did. Was it Richie? Jamie Richie is the seven with Scotland. He's just starting to get a bit frustrated there 10 minutes towards the end. But I think the other thing is that, like, I was watching with my brother at home there, and he just said when one of the Scots had made a line break when they needed a score, there was no one on his shoulder. He couldn't find Stuart Hogg on his right side. And if it was Japan, there'd be two or three either side of him, and they'd make that pass and they'd just go in under the sticks, you know. So there's a massive, they play the game in a very nice way. But yeah, the physicality, I think they're just very clever with their physicality because they're not the biggest team. You can see they have to get second rows from elsewhere because they're not a massive nation and they're not a massive team. But it's how they use it in the contact area. They're very, very good.
Well, Fiona, that was my impression, that every time a Scotsman brought the ball into contact, he was 50-50-ing it, whereas every time a Japanese player brought a ball into contact, he was edging it, more often than not.
Yeah, well, particularly for the first 50 minutes anyway. I think Scotland came into it a bit more then and kind of went to go route one and got a bit more change out of it. But yeah, for as Johnny said, they're not a huge team, but they've really big players in the likes of Leach and Jimeno in the back row that are really class performers, and they give them that extra edge, and they take the ball to any team that perform against. And we saw it against Ireland as well. You know, that wasn't just a one-off win. They've matched it time and time again. So, you know, they'll be definitely up against it going in against a really physical South African side. And it's whether they can keep the tempo, like the game up to suit them, as opposed to getting into a battle with South Africa.
It is. And, you know, I think we're allowed worship at the altar of Japanese rugby and its resurgence, or it's, well, it can't even call it a resurgence. It's evolution, Johnny. But the comparison with the All Blacks is not accurate. But in terms of the philosophy and the way they play, they're playing both ways. They're playing, as you said, clever physicality, or as Fiona said, clever physicality. But they're also playing very much a kind of a purist's game, a purist's attacking game. Their handling skills are unbelievable. The zip they put on the ball, I've only seen matched by the All Blacks.
When they're going in that kind of a flow, it actually is very, very similar to the All Blacks. And I know their coaches will be influenced by that, but it's... It's very nice to watch, and I think a lot of attack coaches will be envious of how they actually get that together, because it's very hard to create that flow in a team. And you see with Ireland, once you lose the confidence from a loss or something like that, the flow isn't there, you know, the passes don't stick, and it's very hard to create the culture that flow is always there. But I think, you know, you might see them come into a bit of trouble. Like, I think if Ireland played them again, they would tighten up the game. Mm-hmm. You know, Scotland were a little bit loose at the start of the game. I wonder, do people get dragged into that kind of a game with them and not kind of stick to their...
Stay with the flow point, Justin, yeah. And as ever, with the conversation for the coming week, it'll migrate towards Ireland. But, I mean, stay with that flow point about how do you capture it, how do you keep it, because it's obvious that certain teams have it. Ireland are close, but they're not there.
Yeah, I think you just have to reward that in training. You know, if someone throws an offload to the ground, you can't give out to them for throwing an offload if it's the right decision to make. If the execution isn't there, but the decision-making is right, then you encourage that. But it's very easy for coaches to kind of tighten up the minute something goes wrong and then maybe give out about the frustration of dropping a ball. But I'm sure they're coached in a way that... You see, the way like Scotland make a line break, there might be one fella there. Stuart Hogg is rapid, so he's always going to try and make up that ground. But when Japan make the line break, or when they get onto an edge, there's a couple of fellas on the same hymn sheet, if you want, that they're running these upfield lines. They're trying to get on the end of the next pass before it's even kind of being thrown. You know, so it's kind of a positive way to run forward. When you see the All Blacks doing it, like Aaron Smith is the main man for it. He'll go diagonally across the pitch and they haven't even made the line break yet. So
yeah.
Maybe it's just the way they coach it and the way the culture is in training that you're encouraged to do those kind of things. And I think every attack should be doing that, but it's easy to say that. It's very hard to kind of keep that up when it doesn't always go your way, you know. So, you know, in fairness to their coaches, whatever they're doing in terms of footwork, handling, like Fiona had said, their real basic skills are there. And you only really see that with the All Blacks because they coach it in a certain way from all the way up, you know. So to turn that around the way Japan have, I know they've had a lot of time together, but to see how smooth they are with their transitions and their passing skills and even the footwork of guys like Matsushima really gets on the outside of fellas, and then they offload back inside where there's always going to be someone supporting them. Like, it's impressive.
It is, and again, one swallow doesn't make a summer, but Fiona, we've seen Italy's attempts to kind of gatecrash the top table for two decades now, and it hasn't worked out. And Japan have a 6-7 year project at this, and they do look like genuine contenders. I know it's slightly unrealistic, but they do have a viable league with plenty of money in it. They seem to have the continuity and the centralised system that Ireland has a version of. It's impressive in a game that kind of was monopolised by the same old nations. They look like that they're about to crash the party.
Well, I think so, but that's with this current group of players and the coaching structure that are there. I just wonder whether the sustainability of it's there. Hopefully this tournament will do a huge amount for getting younger kids playing and then having them come through pathways, which probably aren't as robust as in, I suppose, tier one nations. So what they've done with an incredible group of players and a coaching staff has been really impressive, but a lot of work will have to go into those pathways and structures and try and get kids playing in school if they want to be sustainable towards the next World Cup and beyond, and really make rugby a sport over there, because, you know, it wasn't really making the papers. Now it is, because they're into a quarter final and they've played so well. But before that, I don't think there was much talk about the World Cup over in Japan. You know, it's such a big country and so many different sports there. So hopefully now the team doing well will start that whole legacy, and there'll be a demand for it at levels all the way up.
You're absolutely right to inject that dose of reality, because these are a hand-picked bunch of commandos that have been identified 5-6 years ago, or certainly post 2015. Now, Justin, we're going to have a lot of fun here this week, because we have the New Zealand quarterfinal we now know to look forward to, and wonderful South Africa versus Japan as the fourth quarterfinal on a weekend of quarterfinals to end things on Sunday evening. All of those games live on both radio and television for you on RTE. It's going to be quite a good week here in terms of crack and hype and the circus. Over there, I'd say it'll be equally amusing.
Well, Dara, despite everything, it'll go off the rails, as you know well, over the next few days here. you know, were nothing if not fickle from that Scotland game. We had us, you know, oh, we're going to do this. And then the lows of Japan and Russia. And that's creeping back in. The belief is creeping back there after last night's performance against Samoa. Lots of positives to take from that. And, you know, the Green Army, and they're here in their thousands, as they always are, they're clinging to that. And they're looking forward to a long week, making their way back from Fukuoka all the way up to Tokyo. They're going to take in the sights, and they'll arrive in force, don't you know, come Thursday, Friday into Tokyo.
Tell me about the stadium as much as you can that the quarterfinal is going to be played in terms of numbers, and are we expecting it to generate the green wall of noise?
Yeah, it probably will. I think it's the Tokyo Stadium. It's just over 50,000 as far as I can remember. So you can imagine it's going to be a huge green and black vision that night, you know, because the New Zealanders will be here, obviously, in great numbers too, and it's then going to be a question of, well, who can outshout the others. You know, from old, the All Blacks fans, they don't really react unless it's champagne rugby, and unless they put on a show, we should probably outshout them that night, even if we're struggling a little bit on the scoreboard. But that's not kind of the vibe coming from the camp. They had a very early press conference this morning. Andy Farrell and Tadhg Furlong, one of the heroes of the night last night, were up. And as you can imagine, they were making all the right noises and saying, well, you know, I don't think they didn't know, obviously, at that point who the opposition was going to be. But Andy Farrell was making the point, you know, he'd like to think that whoever it was going to be, you know, that they were going to have respect for Ireland, considering the results of recent times.
Yeah, tell me more before I let you go about the interface between yourselves and the camp and what's to come. I know as you well pointed out correctly, they didn't know at the time of the last press conference who the opposition would be. What's the kind of upcoming programme? Are you going to be getting increased access? Do you get the impression that things are relaxing a little, that you're welcome?
The vibe has been very relaxed, and particularly since they got out of Kobe and that Russia performance, and none of them accepted that was where they needed to be. So they got down here, had the weekend off, and that seems to have done them the power of good, in a sense, Dara, that they had a full week coming into Samoa. They were happy with what went. Of course, there's lots of things that they could actually improve on. But Joe has been very relaxed as I've seen him, which is kind of telling, and the players themselves, while they said, yeah, you know, it's not the route we would have expected. They expected fully, obviously, to win those first three games and be in the quarterfinal ever before they had to come to Fukuoka. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, they accepted that, and they just said, OK, we know what we have to do and move on. But overall, you know, previous campaigns with Joe and previous Six Nations, I've seen him far more prickly and far more on edge. I'm not sure whether or not it's a question that, obviously, these are his final games, what's going on there necessarily, but the players seem to be enjoying it and buying into it, and they're looking at it very, very much that this is a tournament within a tournament, and now we're at finals rugby. It's all it's all on the line from here. They're one-off games from here on in, and they'll certainly fancy themselves there.
I think it's a good point, Justin. The general vibe around the place, Johnny and Fiona, you probably have sensed it as well, is that it was hard to see us coming out of the Samoa match with the spirits refreshed and kind of in a positive place. But because of the circumstances and overcoming the adversity of Bundee Aki's sending off, and the fact that there was all the typhoon talk, and we actually got to play a game, and the typhoon talk diverted a lot of micro attention from Ireland, they seem to be in a good place. Justin, I am going to let you go, but look, I never like conflating the two things, because there's a lot of virtue signalling mm-hmm. that goes on. How can we talk about rugby when people are losing their lives? And of course. Just, you know, nobody's an idiot. But give us a weather update. Obviously, it's past now, but what, if any, was your experience of Hijibis?
Yeah, it's remarkable, Dara. Last Monday, Tuesday, certainly Monday, there was a lot of talk that it could very well affect the Ireland-Samoa game, the tracking system, had it hitting this part of Japan, which is pretty much as far west as you can go. We're closer here to Seoul than we are to Tokyo, so that'll give you an indication of the okay. distances. So we're getting back on a train for a five-hour journey back into Tokyo tomorrow. So we were completely divorced, if you like, from the effect of the typhoon and the damage that it actually brought to those cities further north.
Fair enough.
So it's going to be interesting when we get into Tokyo tomorrow to see, you know, the damage and obviously the aftermath and the cleanup.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. We'll leave it there. And a good point, the scale of the country just indicated a five-hour bullet train ride from where Justin is. Thanks, Justin. Back to Tokyo. Go back to the positivity point and the overcoming adversity. And yesterday, we do seem to be in a good place. And it's funny the way things work out, Fiona. If we were playing anyone else, bar the All Blacks, people would be getting really hot under the collar. But there is... Even the crazy Irish public, of which I'm a member, has to accept that this is a long shot now, but we're still in the fight, and it'll give everyone something to look forward to and a bit of faith for the week.
Yeah, I think you can look at it kind of two ways. Obviously, New Zealand are odds-on favourites for the game based on their performances. Not pre-World Cup, you know, I think they were finding their feet a little bit, but they seem to be getting players back on form and... you know, there's tough selection for New Zealand, and then you've the likes of Brodie Retallick after coming back in from injury, so they're in a really positive place. They were challenged against South Africa. You know, I thought there was a kind of 6 minutes of absolute New Zealand brilliance that came from South mm-hmm. African mistakes. But then after that, there was kind of glimpses of that there was areas that you could get at them, and I'm sure that's what Ireland will be focusing at this week. But you know, New Zealand are world class, and Ireland will have to step it up a huge amount from yesterday. You know, I thought yesterday was positive in every sense, in the sense of their body language, them playing for the full 80, big name players coming back in form like Tadhg Furlong, the halfbacks, Larmer stood up as well. So, you know, Ireland are in a positive place, going down to 14 players and still being convincing winners was really, really good. But they'll have to be a lot sharper, and they know that it's going to have to be the game of their lives to get through this quarterfinals. I think in the past we've had really positive momentum going into the games when we've beaten the All Blacks, so we're not probably on the same path, but at least it's a positive path as opposed to what we had after Japan and Russia. I think we're in a much more positive place.
Couldn't agree more. The perfect game is needed, especially that first 15, 20 minutes, because we could be blown away or... we could catch them, I won't say rusty, but if we had something to put on the scoreboard to make them have to chase a little bit. But what about from a player's point of view?
And I think it'll come from the...
Go ahead, Fiona, sorry.
Sorry, I think a lot will come from our game plan and sticking to what Ireland are good at, but it will have to do with the absolute utmost of perfection, I suppose. It's keeping the tempo to the way we want to play it, you know, using our kicking game. Like, I know there's been a lot of talk about our one-out runners, but when we do it well, that's what stops teams when we physically overpower them. And that's what beat New Zealand the last time as well. So I think we have to stick what we're good at, but we have to do it really well.
Yes, and I can't disagree with anything, but that power, to me, just as a punter, doesn't seem evident, the power that we brought into that 2018 game with the one and, you know, famed Devin Toner picking up Brodie Retallick, wasn't it, and putting him on his backside, that kind of... But look, maybe this is it. Maybe they have tapered their prep. I don't know. Tell me about, Johnny, tell me about the All Blacks in terms of their evolution of the game, obviously, which they keep doing. They're playing the two out halves. This is an attacking threat that no Schmidt team has faced before from the All Blacks or anyone else, really, is it?
Yeah, like, I think tactically they're just leading the game all the time. The Lions' first test, wasn't it, when they just changed their game plan completely. Nobody saw it coming. They attacked very close to the ruck. You'd probably expect something again. They've had a lot of time to prepare for Ireland now, but their game called off, you know. So I think you can expect some sort of an onslaught of tactics from the All Blacks now coming to Ireland. But I think, like Fiona had said, you need the perfect game to kind of disrupt them. And I know South Africa disrupted them physically in the first 20 minutes of their game, and they transferred a lot of pressure. And the All Blacks, You could see them keeping their cool. They were just, they kept throwing the ball around. They kept sticking to the plan. And eventually they just took one or two opportunities that really broke South Africa. But I think with the way Ireland are playing now, Fiona's right with the one-out game being our kind of strong point. Unfortunately, that is our strong point. It's not going to be much to look at unless you win the game. Because you win the game, nobody cares and you start celebrating with everyone. But I think if you just tighten up and New Zealand deal with that very easily, then it's going to... You know, you can imagine there would be a lot of frustration there, but like Ireland threw the ball a couple of times against Samoa, tried to throw a couple of passes. Even Robbie Henshaw's one just before the red card. You know, those passes aren't going to hand at the moment when we try to play the wider game. And, you know, you see New Zealand will just kick that ahead or they'll get a hand on it and all of a sudden they transition into attack and they'll score a couple of tries like that if we're not careful. So I think the tactics from Schmidt has to be spot on to allow our lads to play a perfect game in a sense. You're going to make a couple of mistakes, but... I think the passion and what they'll bring to the quarterfinal might kind of paper over some of those cracks, but it's going to be minimal mistakes if you're going to actually get something out of the game.
Yeah, and I mean, dog-eared tactics, they do look a bit weather-beaten at this stage, the one-out runners, but I just have like maybe a chemical imbalance in my head. But what the way when I'm playing this forward, I remember 2013, remember the game that we just took them to the wire and Ryan Crotty had to go in at the corner, and we all know the game I'm talking about. But something happened in the first 10 or 15 minutes of that match that Ireland had a couple opportunities, took them, and then they sat back and played. They just tried to kind of stay with them punch for punch after that. That would be the only narrative that I could see unfolding that would give us a chance, that first 10 or 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, and I think it's someone just stepping up. Like Robbie Henshaw's been always good at getting that try, you know, in Chicago and against England at Twickenham. I think he's got a couple of important ones and, you know, Tadhg Furlong might rumble his way over James Ryan or someone, CJ, maybe someone will rumble their way over close to the line and just, you know, you're just looking for someone to make that extra yard that gets them over the line as opposed to falling short of it, and where players are kind of going, thank God someone got over, you know.
Yes.
That's the kind of feeling when you're on the pitch that someone just kind of breaks the deadlock for you and you don't really know how you've scored, but someone has stepped up a small bit, you know. So I think we need that in a sense. We need someone to step up.
We need five of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
30 points, minimum.
You need a couple of, like, you need everyone having close to their best game and a couple of lads going over and above just to get those couple of scores. You know, Johnny Sexton has to be really playing one of his better games, which, you know, it's a good game when he can bring that to the table. The same with Conor Murray, when they can be that influential. I think Ireland are all in the same on the same page, but it's going to take a lot. And like New Zealand's tactics, like we had said, they're going to bring so much to this game that I'm not sure Ireland know what's coming.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing is, we don't know if we lose, and if, you know, New Zealand beat us comfortably, we won't know until the end of the tournament how good this New Zealand team is, because they'll have other tests after us, and who knows. So it's very hard to,
but I think even if Ireland come through this test, if they do win and it's a massive win, what's going to be left in the Irish squad to go on?
Oh, who cares?
It's going to be a massive win.
I know, sorry, they'll care, but I don't from over here. I mean, if we could get one more weekend out of it, it'd be just a hopper. Like, how real, how tangible is the fact that when you're lining up for the haka and all the rest of it, or you're in a line-out, or you're scrummaging, that you look across and you say, you know, if you're a Tadhg Furlong, if you're a James Ryan, if you're Rob Henshaw, you say, God, yeah, I know, I've beaten these guys before. Is that a big thing, Johnny?
I think absolutely. Like, even for the public, like you've said, I think we're all looking at it now saying we're playing New Zealand, who we know we've beaten.
Not interested in the public for this question now.
Yeah,
just interested as a player. Is there something in that?
Like? But that's what I mean. Like, even everyone takes that from it. Like, players will 100% take that from it. Like, they'll see the players lining up across the way from them, but it goes through everybody. The coaches will approach the game very differently, because you can relay things. You can go back to, say, the game in whatever year when we did this to them. They know that we can do that, and players will take confidence from that and think that they're not a million miles away from the guy that's facing them. Because, I mean, Ireland have the World Player of the Year on their side. They've got they've got a lot of players that have beaten the side as well. So of course they will take a lot of confidence from that. But I think with the position that Ireland are in at the moment, it won't take a whole lot to break that confidence either. You know, Justin mentioned the word fickle a while ago, but I think the confidence on Ireland's side will be
brittle.
Yeah, it is, like, because it'll only take one or two moments from New Zealand for them to think, geez, we're in a game here again, you know. So they will take confidence from it. Players 100% do take that from it, but it'll be they'll have to really perform to keep that confidence up for the full game.
I accept that. I mean, look, if we don't have any neutrals here, so there's no point in pretending. I mean, you can try your best to be neutral about this one, but it's almost impossible, whether we're sports media people or just punters. But Fiona, when did you know that you had the All Blacks beaten when you played them? Or the Black Ferns, I should say.
Yeah, like our World Cup, we were very much focused on the first game, which was USA, because they were ranked higher than us and had beaten us numerous times before. So we literally had a four-day turnaround. But everything we did in those 4 days, we're talking about how we beat New Zealand. We knew we were fitter than them. We said if we got to the 60-minute mark that we'd beat them on fitness. And it was at the 60-minute mark, you could hear the players saying, we have them now, we have them now. And and it was definitely our fitness that brought us through then. But you know, you're still, New Zealand are so dangerous. All they need is one chance. So we very much, there was a lot of scrambled defence and things going on, but it was definitely around the 60-minute mark and that we had to play for that final 20 and bring something extra for the final 20 because we knew we had it in the tank.
And finally, it was a great memory and hopefully we can kind of leave the programme with that. But finally, in terms of the two-week break, effectively, that due to the weather asterisks that the All Blacks have had in the cancelled game against Italy, everyone assumes, I suppose, what I'm trying to say is you'd want to be a bit of a super optimist to think that in any way could be a negative.
The only way it could be a negative is that they haven't really been challenged since the first weekend, that they've kind of coasted through. You know, I don't think that they'll lose focus because they know what they need to be the best, and they'll very much be focused on themselves. While not disrespecting Ireland, but it'd be very much about them enforcing their own game plan. You know, it's nice that now that they have had that rest, that they're fully fresh with a full complement, I suppose, to pick from. You know, and there's huge competition there as well in their squad. So what best squad I think he'll pick to play against Ireland as opposed to what other people will see as the best squad. But yeah, like 2 weeks for them, I don't think it'll make a huge amount of difference, just that they mightn't be as match sharp as they probably would have liked. But they probably would have rested people anyway if they had that game. So, you know, it's 6-1 really.
Yeah, as ever when you're facing the All Blacks. Last word for you, Johnny, just in terms of the week to come, what are you going to be looking out for as a man who's kind of half man, half biscuit, half media, half player? You're still fresh now. What are you going to be looking out for when you're kind of observing the vibe and the atmosphere?
I don't know, really. I think you're looking for what kind of confidence is coming from the Irish camp, what way they kind of manage their media, who they're sending out for the media, you know, these kind of things. I think they offer some bit of insight into it. Like, it's interesting to take Furlong and straight back out into the media after last night's great performance, and you probably get a bit of an inkling into who the All Blacks are picking based on who they're going to send out as well. So, like, I think you just, you know, you'd be all over Twitter and trying to find out the news from across the world. Like, that's the way I've been doing things with the whole World Cup. Like, Twitter's been unbelievable for trying to keep up with journalists and stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't know. I think trying to, you know, you only have Ireland have one less game to analyse as well from the All Blacks. So you'd wonder how they'll approach that one. But it's I think they just have to focus on themselves, isn't it? And we have to wait and see what comes out of it. So there's not a whole lot we can really see from the next week until we get to cheer them on Sunday.
So name the team 1 to 15 as things stand, injuries notwithstanding, and I'll ask Fiona to do the same and then we'll feck off and enjoy the rest of our Sunday.
Yeah, I think the one that the centre partnership is going to be up in the air because of the red card yesterday, so that's something. But I think if Bundy Aki is out, I'd like to see Ringrose come in there and Henshaw go to 12, but I think the rest of the team nearly picks itself, does it?
Bar Rob Kearney and Larmer, yeah, arguably.
I think Kearney will get back in there. He plays in these big games.
And
you know,
he's beaten the Blacks of
exactly
three.
Like, I think it accounts for a lot. You know, Larmer has had his kind of, he's had one or two great performances. He's had one or two difficult ones as well. Like, so I don't think you're going to really throw him in there in the quarterfinal, but you're looking at Healy, Best, Furlong, Henderson, Ryan. The back row is probably something that people will speak about, but I'd imagine he will go. Yeah, I think he came on yesterday just for a bit of match sharpness, like, wasn't it? Make sure he's okay. He got a nice turnover at one stage, so I think he played 20 minutes, was it, last night? I think he's going to play CJ, Josh Van der Flair, Murray, Sexton. I think if Aki is out, then you're going to go with Henshaw, Ringrose, Kearney, Urzi and Stockdale. It probably picks itself, doesn't it?
Anything else, Fiona, to add to that, or would you go along with that? It's not bad, really, sure doesn't.
Yeah, no, I think that's going to be the team that's picked. Like, I think Ruddock and Byrne have definitely put their hand up in that back row and their two performances that have come. So for the bench position, that will be interesting. You know, I don't think Henshaw came back as fresh as we probably would have liked, because he did when he came back into the warm-up games. He was really fresh that first game back, whereas yesterday he was a bit rusty. So we'll definitely need to see an improvement from him if he is to start against the All Blacks, but I think it's pretty much set. That'll be his strongest, what he envisages the strongest team to go out and play them.
Yeah, and then Farrell off the bench and possibly Ruddock for a bit of heft and all the rest. Yeah, fascinating. Thank you, Fiona, for taking time to chat to us. And thank you, Johnny, for coming in here. Just let me remind you, this is the quarterfinal lineup: England versus Australia, New Zealand versus Ireland, Wales versus France. And to finally, to bring a curtain down on a brilliant weekend, Sunday at 11:15 a.m. Irish time, Japan versus South Africa. And we're on air, I presume we'll be on about half an hour before kickoff, which is 8:15 England, Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, 11:15 next Saturday. Live on radio, live on television. We're live in Cork and we're going to wave goodbye to you until then. Thanks to Fiona and Johnny once again. Thanks to Justin. Thanks to Brendan here in the Cork studio. And enjoy the rest of your weekend. Go easy.